The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com.
Well, I give up my gun when everybody else does.
And is that
doesn't that make sense?
Well,
doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you were to, if there were guns here, would you be want to be the only person without one?
So do you carry guns routinely at home? I mean, you have a gun at home?
Yeah, it's legal in the United States. It's part of our Constitution. You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny. Not to hunt, It's to protect yourself from the police.
And do you see any link between that and these sorts of incidents?
No. Nah, not really. You know what I'm saying? If somebody wants to kill people, you know, they don't need a gun to do it.
Makes it easier though, doesn't it?
Not really. You can use, you can strap explosives on your body. They do that all the time.
So when there's the inevitable backlash of the anti-gun lobby as a result of this incident, as it always is.
Well, that's not going to change anything
in
the United States.
Nah.
The United States is based on guns. You know, like KRS says, you'll never have justice on stolen land. So it's not going to change.
Cowboy T here. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I sure did. Miss BHC and I had some of her most excellent lasagna. Trademark. But since it was Thanksgiving, of course, we did it with ground turkey instead of beef this time. Hey, you know, low fat and still tasty, yeah. Like Sarah Palin would say, you betcha. But of course, as always, we're here to talk about more than one thing. And it's certainly not just about what we had for Thanksgiving. I'm sure by now, y'all have heard about the decision by the grand jury there in Ferguson, Missouri. I think the dead have heard about the grand jury decision there in Ferguson, Missouri. Seems they didn't see fit to indict Officer Darren Wilson for his shooting of unarmed teenager Michael Brown. And on top of that, it now seems that Darren Wilson has resigned from the police. You know, I got mixed feelings about this. And I can tell you, none of them are positive. One of those feelings is that, well, people who look like my dad continue to automatically be targets to far too many police officers. Seems especially the case if the cop is white. There's this automatic assumption that, oh, that guy's black. He must be guilty of something. I'll pull him over and give him some extra scrutiny. I know a lot of you don't like hearing that. It's hard sometimes, you know, to be willing to put yourself in the position of someone else. And that's where I'm kind of fortunate. I know too many cops, personally, so I've been able to ask them over the years about, you know, what they think about things like this. And the answer always comes back something like, hey man, I want to go home to my family too. And that kind of sums up their answer, folks. Hey, you know, maybe they really are afraid of the people in the communities that they're policing. I don't know. Is it the case? Is it really the case? Are cops getting shot at an alarming rate these days? Well, not according to FBI statistics, no. On the contrary, it seems the shooting of officers has actually gone down, not up. If anything, it seems it's getting safer to be a cop as the years go on. This is, by the way, despite an increase in private gun ownership over those same years. Mrs. Sarah Brady, start listening. So, given that, what's going on that these cops, people that I know, would, to a man, say, I want to go home to my family too, and that's basically it. Remember how last time we discussed the case for American Muslims arming themselves? Well, maybe American blacks ought to consider the same thing. Now, there's a reason Ice-T said what you heard him saying at the beginning of this episode, and seems he may have a point too. Now, first, let's get one thing out of the way. There was a bit of rioting in Ferguson, unfortunately, after the grand jury's ruling was handed down. A few buildings were burned down. You know, and a police car even got set on fire. There were even comparisons to the rioting in L.A. after the Rodney King beating. You know what those four white officers, how they got acquitted by the all-white jury back then? Well, fortunately, the rioting in Ferguson wasn't nearly to the extent as what happened in L.A., but still, rioting is bad news. I think we'd all agree on that. There's a place for protesting, absolutely, but not rioting. Therefore, I think it's also important to understand why that happened. Folks, that didn't happen as a result of just one teenager named Michael Brown getting shot. That's not enough to bring about that level of community anger. It takes a whole lot more than that, folks, to get that many people that riled up. Seems there's been a systematic, historic issue with white cops there in the St. Louis area harassing black citizens under the color of law. I remind you that Ferguson is a suburb of St. Louis. That anger on the part of the people there, that anger was always there. This case, the initial police response to it with the military tactics and the hardware. Yeah, you know, those tanks and all that. That was just the last straw that broke the camel's back. See, when you see the people who look like you are routinely getting mistreated over and over again for the color of your skin, well, folks, that's what we call Jim Crow. Yeah, folks, even in 2014, there's still some Jim Crow attitudes going on. Oh, he's black. He's probably going to attack me. That's the thinking. My dad's sure been on the receiving end of that throughout his life. Even in California during the 90s. Yeah, in the 90s, the dot-com boom era. You remember that? White cop pulls him over and harasses him, searches his car at gunpoint. At the time, my dad was driving a Lexus. Nice car. And that sounds a lot to me like when Sir Mix-a-Lot got pulled over by six patrol cars maybe a couple years ago. He was driving within the speed limit. Wasn't, you know, doing burnouts or anything that he shouldn't be doing. But here's the thing. He was driving his legally purchased Lamborghini Diablo, see? Yeah. Black guy in a nice car. Yep, cops were white. Yep, they harassed him, jacked him up against his car, threatened to throw him in jail for stolen property. Even though it's his car, they're still threatening to throw him in jail for stolen property. All that stuff. Well, it's only after three teenagers saw him and said, "Hey, Mix, what's up?" Only then did the cops realize just who they had pulled over. Those three teenagers happened to be white. And get this, they started recording the whole scene with their phone cams, what the cops were doing to Sir Mix-a-Lot. All of a sudden, then the cops got all nice and such. Huh. Funny that. Folks, even I've been on the receiving end of this. And even as, you know, light-skinned as I typically am, you've seen my videos, you know what I look like. If I've been out in the sun, though, like during the summertime, well, turns out I tan pretty well. Nice California boy. I'm obviously happy for that. I get this nice deep bronze color. Thank you, Dad. Fortunately, I haven't had cops jack me up, but I have had white women clutching their purses and crossing the streets when I've walked by. That's happened. Now, this is when I was dressed in a polo shirt, blue jeans, and either Birkenstocks. Well, hey, it was Seattle. Or tennis shoes. Hardly what I'd call gangsta paraphernalia, folks. So pretending that racial profiling doesn't happen, that's about like trying to claim the sky's not blue on a sunny day. I mean, yeah, you can claim it all you want, but good luck trying to convince most people. So racial profiling is a problem. Let's not pretend it isn't. And I can give you example after example of judges, lawyers, corporate businessmen, even politicians who've been pulled over by the cops for walking while black. Driving while black, sitting in front of your own house while black, being inside your own house while black. That's right, being inside your own house while black, jogging while black, and even waiting for your child in front of the daycare while black. I can give you lots of examples. I've got them here. Plenty of them out there. But I'm not going to do that here. What I'm going to do instead later on in this episode is I'm going to tell you a little story about a well-off, upper-middle-class, Harvard-educated family. Well, actually, no, not necessarily Harvard. I'm sorry. It's Ivy League school, but not necessarily Harvard. So, begs the question, are all officers bad? Absolutely not. No way. For every Darren Wilson out there, Stacy Kuhn, Johannes Meserle, Kevin Flanagan, guess what? For every one of them, there's also a Trooper David Plug. Let me tell you about him. Trooper David Plug, Indiana State Police, just saved a life a few days ago. Yeah, seems some guy was helping his sister with her car. You know, being a nice, good brother, he's helping her out when the darn thing stalled and she needed a jump start. Of course, he's her brother. Well, this helpful brother gets hit in the leg by another car. Oh, and the other driver that hit him was drunk. Yeah. Dude gets thrown over the guardrail. Would have died from loss of blood. Except for Trooper Plug. Yep. Trooper runs over with his tourniquet, stops the bleeding, gets the ambulance here in time, and the dude's going to be okay. Later on, the driver got pulled over, blood alcohol tested, and arrested like he should be. That guy who got hit by that drunk dude is alive today because of that cop. He's alive because of that cop. Now, does that cop consider himself a hero? I doubt it. Not likely. Wonder how many times he's done stuff like that throughout his career. Now, come to think of it, I wonder how many times other officers have done stuff just like that. I know one who used to live in Nebraska. He told me about it. I remember Miss BHC, come to think of it, telling me about when she got stuck on the road one time. Major freeway, folks. People are zipping along routinely at, high speed, 65 miles an hour. She's on the side of the road. She has a flat tire. She's scared to death of all those cars whizzing by like moving. Well, I would be, too. I'd be a little worried myself. Well, Virginia State Trooper shows up. And as she describes him, big, fine, handsome brother. By the way, she's here and she's chuckling at that. Now, State Trooper's all stern and cop-like, like most State Troopers are. He hears her tell him what's going on, and he says all stern and cop-like to her, "Remain in your car, ma'am." The next thing she knows, the rear of her car's rising up. She's going, "What's going on?" She looks back. This trooper's actually jacking up her car and changing her tire for her. Yeah, that's right. Naturally, there was no way he was going to accept anything other than a thank you for what he had done. Here's another one. Just a couple months ago, an officer, Nick Rollins in Florida, saved a woman's life. Turns out her arm got cut by some broken bottle glass. I think this was at her restaurant. They hire off-duty cops for security purposes, and Officer Nick Rollins was one of them. She probably would have died if Officer Rollins hadn't jumped in and stopped the bleeding. She's alive today because of Officer Rollins. That's the kind of thing that gives cops a good name. And it should. Likewise, racial profiling is the kind of thing that gives cops a bad name. And it should. What we need is for the good cops, and rest assured, there are a whole lot of them out there. We need the good cops to be willing to stand up and act against this racial profiling. That's what's got to happen. We need the good ones to stand up and say, no, this isn't cool. We got to stop that. You're not automatically guilty of something just because you're not white. The problem, of course, is that blue shield. See, there's a culture in too many police precincts of cover up for your fellow officers. And it happens so often that the Justin Volpes and the Daniel Pantaleos of the world, they drown out the Trooper Plugs and Officer Nick Rollinses. Like the good guys like we talked about earlier. Yeah, the good ones get drowned out by the bad apples. Now, what I'm asking for here might take a lot of courage. I get that. It was a retired New York City cop named Frank Serpico. Yeah. He blew the whistle on what he described as rampant racketeering. Well, his word is grafting. Seems cops were getting rich from racketeering. Well, Officer Serpico saw this and exposed this corruption, which resulted in something called the Knapp Commission. Basically, the racketeering got put down, and a lot of other officers who were milking that system and getting rich were ticked off as a result. Officer Serpico basically became a pariah. Well, shortly thereafter, he was involved in a drug-related arrest, and he was shot under what still to this day remain controversial circumstances. The year was 1971. The other two cops with him did not go with him inside to effect the arrest. That's right. He was left all alone. Officer Serpico took a bullet that grievously wounded him. Matter of fact, there was a movie made about this right in the early 70s. I think Al Pacino played the role of Officer Serpico. The cops with him apparently decided not to call in Officer Shot and get the emergency medical services on site. Yeah, you heard that right. They didn't call in that their fellow officer just got shot. They chose not to call that in. Rather, it was a neighbor, a civilian, that called emergency services, probably 911. That's right, folks. Officer Serpico's fellow officers left him there to die. Good thing for that civilian, otherwise Officer Serpico would probably be dead today. Instead, today he's 78 years old. And I think that's what too many other officers are afraid of. They're afraid they might end up like Officer Frank Serpico. Maybe that's why they don't blow the whistle on their own, even when their own are acting badly. But then I think of Harriet Tubman and how she could have just sat quietly by too. I think of Sojourner Truth. She could have sat idly by. Mark Felt, you know him better as the 1970s era deep throat informant about Watergate. He could have just sat by too. Sharon Watkins, one of the Enron whistleblowers in 2001. You remember that whole Enron scandal? She could have sat by and not said a word too, but she blew the whistle. See, all these folks knew that what was happening was wrong. And instead of just sitting by, they stood up. So they're heroes in my book. And so is NYPD Officer Frank Serpico. And we need more Frank Serpicos, folks. A lot more. When we get back, we're going to talk about Black Friday gun sales. Yeah, we're back to guns here for a moment. See you in a bit. This being just after the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, well, there were a lot of so-called Black Friday sales. Yeah. For those of you who haven't heard of Black Friday and don't know what it is, well, I suppose it really should be called After Thanksgiving Day sales. Yeah, lots of things get pretty sizable discounts. That's the short version. Appliances, toys, clothing, TVs, you name it. And fortunately, it also applies to one of our favorite retail items. Firearms. All right. Yeah, guns also tend to get Black Friday discounts. I got to tell you what happened 2 years ago. Dick's Sporting Goods had a major discount on Remington 700 ADL rifles. Now, these things normally went for $549. But after the discount and the mail-in rebate, it ended up costing $349. Uh-huh, that's a $200 knockdown there, folks. We're talking Savage Access prices now, you know, close to even, you know, Rem 770 prices. And this is for a Remington 700. Jeez, no wonder why they sold so darn many of them. And, yeah, as is typical of Remington 700s, those ADLs do shoot pretty darn well. I've seen a few of them in action. They work. Well, this year, discounts weren't quite to that extreme, unfortunately, no. But just the same, Walmart and Dick's both had major discounts again. Those big box stores, they get to do that because their economies of scale. And one of the better deals was on Savage's Trophy Hunter XP series. Savage rifles are darn good rifles for the money. And the Trophy Hunter XP series comes with the AccuTrigger and the Nikon ProStaff scope already mounted on it. Pretty cool, huh? Yeah. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Nikon ProStaff, that's a pretty good hunting scope. Price after the mail-in rebate for the whole package was, I don't know, something like $429. For a good rifle and a good scope, that's pretty good for that setup, folks. Big 5 Sporting Goods out west also had some good discounts. Cabela's had some good prices on some of their black powder revolvers. I was kind of tempted by that one for a moment. Oh, and those stores weren't the only ones. There are plenty of others. And as a result of all this, a lot of people do buy guns on Black Friday sales. Sure, you bet. Gun is an item for purchase like any other, right? So why not wait until they go on sale if you can? Sure. Heck yeah. Well, seems the aunties have also noticed this trend and, big surprise, they don't like it. Aww. CNN seems to want to call attention to how all the Black Friday background checks are, quote-unquote, overloading the system. Yeah, read this article about them pretty recently. CNN is claiming that there were 175,000 background checks being done this last Friday. Fox News did publish the same number, so since it came from two basically polar opposite sources, that figure's probably true. I tend to believe that number. Remember, by law, dealers cannot complete the purchase unless the buyer passes the background check. Can't do it. It's not allowed. With one exception. If 3 days have gone by without a yay or nay from the feds, then, and I quote the law, completion of the sale becomes... No, I'm not quoting the law. I'm sorry. I'm quoting CNN. Completion of the sale becomes the prerogative of the licensed gun shop owner, according to the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act of 1998. That's quoting CNN. Sorry about that. Well, that gives the federales a good incentive not to stall with people's background checks, doesn't it? And I think that's fair. If you can't get it done within 3 days, well, the purchaser shouldn't have to suffer a penalty. Fair is fair. Remember, the vast majority of people buying guns are lawful purchasers. Just like the vast majority of people buying cars and kitchen knives and refrigerators. But see, the aunties want to automatically assume negative things about us gun owners. Unfortunately, yeah. They want to automatically assume that we're just going to go shooting up people just because we wanna. They don't even stop to consider what, for example, 12-year-old Kendra St. Clair did a couple years ago. Tell you what happened. Somebody broke into her family's home. Kendra's home alone from school. If I recall correctly, her mother was at work. Well, Kendra's scared, you know, because someone's breaking into the house. She calls her mother. And Mama told her, Kendra, get my gun, go hide, and then call 911. She did just that and hid in one of the closets. Well, the scumbag eventually started opening the closet door where Kendra was hiding. Of course she was scared. Who wouldn't be? Kendra pulls the trigger and scores. Way to go, girl. The dirtbag goes running and gets caught by police soon thereafter. Jail time! And one alive, brave little girl. I wouldn't be surprised if Mama bought that gun on a Black Friday sale, by the way. That family didn't look rich. I saw the video clip of their house and such. You know, not they're not way in the poorhouse, mind you, don't get me wrong, but they're certainly not like, you know, these politician millionaire types that we see. Dropping $600 on a brand new pistol is a pretty hefty expense. That's a lot of money. So therefore, if you can get that same pistol for, say, a $150 discount on a Black Friday sale, that helps. But... Well, it seems the aunties would rather Mama hadn't bought that pistol. Seems the aunties would have had that home invader do whatever the heck he wanted to young Kendra. I know, sick, isn't it? Well, as you might imagine, I have a different view. I am very glad that Kendra had access to Mama's gun that day. Probably saved her life. And countless actions like that happen every single day, folks. And in most of them, the self-defender didn't even have to shoot. They happen every day. They're just not reported on in the news. You see, there's no sensationalism there, you see. Didn't bleed, so it didn't lead. Yeah, no heartstrings to tug on, see, so no national attention. No Anderson Cooper, no Aaron Burnett, no Diane Sawyer, no Tom Brokaw or young Kendra St. Clair. Nope. The thug got nailed, not the innocent little blonde girl. So, local news coverage only. Well, you know, I'll give this to Fox. They may be loony in a lot of ways, and I believe that they are, but they did publish this one on their national news site. Now, hey, look, even if I don't particularly like you, of course that goes for CNN too, I'm still going to give you credit when you're right. And Fox was right on that one. Fairness matters, folks. And that's why I'm glad for Black Friday gun sales. Any gun sale. Really? They make the tools of self-defense more affordable to the average person. Someone like Kendra's mom. Someone like my dad back before he really made it. Heck, for that matter, someone like me. So I sincerely hope those sales continue. And you can quote this here San Francisco Liberal on that. We'll be back. Earlier, we talked about the aftermath of what happened in Ferguson, Missouri. I told you then I wouldn't regale you with all those examples I've got of why people there got set off. I also mentioned I'd tell you a little story. It's one example of why I believe Black Americans too should arm themselves, and that includes younger adults. The following is told by Mr. Lawrence Graham. He's a New York attorney and apparently a pretty prolific author, too. Seems he's written something like, 14 books? That includes one called The Senator and the Socialite. I haven't read it, but I imagine some of you might have. My fellow liberals, as well as my progressive brothers and sisters, you especially need to pay attention to this. Especially if you're having a little trouble understanding why I think an armed society is a more polite society. Here we go. Mr. Graham, take it away. I knew the day would come, but I didn't know how it would happen, where I would be, or how I would respond. It is the moment that every black parent fears, the day their child is called a nigger. My wife and I, both African Americans, constitute one of those type A couples with Ivy League undergraduate and graduate degrees who, for many years, believed that if we worked hard and maintained great jobs, we could insulate our children from the blatant manifestations of bigotry that we experienced as children in the 1960s and 70s. We divided our lives between a house in a liberal New York suburb and an apartment on Park Avenue. We sent our three kids to a diverse New York City private school and outfitted them with the accoutrements of success, preppy clothes, perfect diction, and that air of quiet graciousness. We convinced ourselves that the economic privilege we bestowed on them could buffer these adolescents against what so many black and Latino children face while living in mostly white settings, being profiled by neighbors, followed in stores and stopped by police simply because their race makes them suspect. But it happened, nevertheless, in July, when I was 100 miles away. It was a Tuesday afternoon, when my 15-year-old son called from his academic summer program at a leafy New England boarding school and told me that, as he was walking across campus, a gray Acura with a broken rear taillight pulled up beside him. Two men leaned out of the car and glared at him. "Are you the only nigger at Mellon Academy?" one of them shouted. Certain he had not heard them correctly, my son moved closer to the curb and asked politely, "I'm sorry, I didn't hear you." But he had heard correctly, and this time the man spoke more clearly. "Only nigger," he said with added emphasis. My son froze. He dropped his backpack in alarm and stepped back from the idling car. The men honked the horn loudly and drove off, their laughter echoing behind them. By the time he recounted his experience a few minutes later, my son was back in his dorm room, ensconced on the third floor of a red brick fortress. He tried to grasp the meaning of the story as he told it, why the men chose to stop him, why they did it in broad daylight, why they were so calm and deliberate. "Why would they do that to me?" he whispered breathlessly under the phone. "Dad, they don't know me, and they weren't acting drunk. It's just 3:30 in the afternoon. They could see me, and I could see them." My son rambled on, describing the car and the men, asking questions that I couldn't completely answer. One very clear and cogent query was why, in Connecticut in 2014, grown men would target a student who wasn't bothering them to harass in broad daylight. The men intended to be menacing. "They got so close, like they were trying to ask directions. They were definitely trying to scare me," he said. "Are you okay?" I interrupted. "Are you?" "Yeah," he continued anxiously. "I'm okay, I guess. Do you think they saw which dorm I went back to? Maybe I shouldn't have told my roommate. Should I stay in my dorm and not go to the library tonight?" Despite his reluctance, I insisted that he report the incident to the school. His chief concern was not wanting the white students' administrators to think of him as being special, different, or racial. That was his word. If the other kids around here find out that I was called a nigger and that I complained about it," my son pleaded, "then they'll call me racial, and I'll be thinking about race every time they'll be thinking about race every time they see me. I can't have that." For the next 4 weeks of the summer program, my son remained leery of cars that slowed in his proximity. He's still leery today. He avoided sidewalks, choosing instead to walk on campus lawns. And he worried continually about being perceived as racially odd or different. "Thank you, Mr. Graham." Of course, Mr. Graham's not really here. I was standing in for him with my voice. But those are his words, verbatim. There's a lot more to this piece, and it's worth your time to read. You should read it, folks. It was published on the Washington Post on November 6th of this year, 2014, nearly a month ago, so it's pretty recent. Yes, folks, this sort of thing still happens, even in the year 2014. I'm still amazed. That kid obviously thought those two white guys might actually attack him. Unfortunately, he's got good reason to believe that. Anybody remember Jasper, Texas? Yeah, thought you might. Oh, and this is, by the way, yet another reason why these anti-gun college campus administrators are so terribly wrong. I know the kid's 15, but this also applies to college campuses here. They don't believe that college kids like, say, this young fellow, when he comes of age, should be able to protect themselves from racists like those two hoodlums? Really? Yeah, by the way, I would call them hoodlums. You darn tootin' I would. You see, this is the reality that even preppy, well-off kids face, if they're black. Yep, even if you're what Ann Coulter, Rudy Giuliani, and Representative Michelle Bachmann would call, quote-unquote, raised right. Yeah, well, that happened here. He was raised like that. And yet, this still happened to him. The kid is 15 years old, folks. Oh, but blacks call each other that all the time. Yeah, sure, we've all heard that before, haven't we? Well, I'm not aware that black people have had a habit of hanging folks and burning crosses in their yards and firebombing their homes and churches and the police beating them up for merely wanting to vote or for doing 10 miles over. Just because those folks were black. I'm not aware of that history. So when a white person uses that word at a black person, yeah, it does take on an especially threatening meaning. Remember, folks, what happened to my dad. I quote them. I quote those racists. "We're going to cut ourselves up a nigger, boys." Reminds me of that old sick joke. What do you call a black PhD? Nigger. Like I said, it's an old and sick joke. but apparently it's true even today. And that's even the case when you're raised like the Huxtable family children on The Cosby Show. You remember that show, folks? I sure do. I watch it all the time. You all remember, father's a prominent doctor, mother's a prominent lawyer, kids are well off, they live in some upscale New York neighborhood in a brownstone, and those brownstones aren't cheap in New York either. Well, that's what happened with Lawrence Graham's oldest son. And the Graham family is very similar to that fictional Huxtable family on TV. Go look up the article in the Washington Post, and you'll see the picture of them that I'm seeing. Yeah, there's a picture. There's a picture of the family. That oldest son, totally a chip off the old block. Looks just like his father. Oh, and he's dressed like Carlton on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, too. God, he looks preppy. Whoa. I'm half expecting him, you know, to see him be doing the Carlton dance, all right? The other two grandchildren, another son and a daughter, they look every bit the kind of the kids you'd see at some Ivy League prep school. You know, somewhere like the Sidwell Friends or something where various presidents' kids have gone. And even this family got the N-word. Even that kind of kid got the N-word. That's what was really behind what you saw in Ferguson, Missouri. Now, I'm also hearing a lot of talk about, what about the rampant black-on-black crime? How come that's not being talked about here? Well, here's my response to that. What about what happens to all the white-on-black hatred against families like the Grahams? How come the people yelling about black-on-black crime don't want to talk about the Grahams? Isolated case? Nope. Happened to a high-powered Hollywood couple, too. Y'all remember Punky Brewster's best friend? Yeah, you know that TV show in the 80s? Way back then? Yeah. How about on Family Matters, Laura Winslow's best friend, Max Johnson, also Waldo Geraldo Faldo's girlfriend? Well, both characters were played by an actress named Cherry Johnson. Sorry about that, Cherry. Turns out she's seeing this other actor named Dennis White. He's most famous for his role in the movie Notorious. Now, Cherry is a total babe. Dennis is a handsome dude. Typical Hollywood, quote-unquote, beautiful people. Well, they're heading to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina on this, you know, romantic getaway. Cherry saw some cotton growing up on the side of the road in some farm. She'd never seen cotton before. Well, heck, I can understand that because, you know, I'd never seen cotton before either till I made my trip out here to the East Coast. Cotton's just not something you see when you're growing up in California, eh? Oranges, yeah. Fruits and nuts, definitely. But cotton, nah. Nope. So she and Dennis stopped to take some pictures of it. I did the same thing on my trip out here while I was going through Texas. Well, guess what? While they're taking pictures, as they're walking back to their car, a cop shows up. Handcuffs them. Yeah, handcuffs them. Starts questioning them about drugs and such, like over and over again. Handcuffs them. Yeah. Folks, listen to this audio. You won't believe your ears.
Hollywood stars and a police officer who allegedly stepped over the line. Punky Brewster and Family Matters star Cherry Johnson and her boyfriend, fellow actor Dennis White, say they were on a romantic getaway after teaching an acting workshop in North Carolina. They decided to drive down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when a sightseeing stop led to some very unwelcome attention from the police. It's at that point where Cherry and Dennis's adventure suddenly took a disturbing turn. They say an officer harassed them, handcuffed them for no reason, searched their belongings, and eventually let them go without so much as an apology. Now, a writer posted their story to a CNN iReport, and it's touched off a tidal wave of reaction and an internal and police investigation into what the couple believes is a serious case of racial profiling.
Cherry Johnson and Dennis White are with us right now from Hollywood. It's great to have you both here. I'm so sorry it is under these circumstances, guys, because it's just a terrible story. And Dennis, I want to start with you. You were pulled over. You guys were on the side of the road. You were just taking some pictures, checking out a cotton field, and that's when you encountered the police officer. What happened?
Well, you know, Cherry, she's never seen cotton before, so we saw the field. We pulled over, took some pictures, and just taking in the whole aspect of it, walking back to the car, And the officer pulled up. Cherry was like, I just wanted to take some pictures. The cop pulled his gun, you know, reached for his gun, told us to get in the car. So we got in the car. He asked for my license registration, which is customary. He went back, checked everything, came back clean. He asked us a billion questions, where we were going, where we were staying, how long we've known each other. Then he pulled me out the car, asked me more questions about drugs, all different type of things. And then he went and questioned her and, you know, came back, said she had a warrant for arrest, which was actually not true. He came back and verified it wasn't true. He asked, could he search the car? And I said, no. He then went, put his gloves on and handcuffed me, and very aggressively. So, you know, I asked, was I being arrested? He said, no. I said, I'm not arrested, but you handcuffed me. He said, because I can. And then he went and pulled her out of the car and handcuffed her. It was hot, bugs flying all around. It was crazy. And he just really was asking her a lot of questions about drugs and just said there might be a dead body. That's why he wants to check the car. Another officer showed up and, you know, talked to us. He asked again, could he check the car? We said no. Cherry asked for a watch commander. He said, oh, you want to play that game? You want to play hardball? Well, you know, I can just take you downtown for trespassing and petty larceny. So at that point, you know, I didn't want to see, it didn't need to go any further. So I said, okay, sure, check the car. I have nothing to hide. So he went, checked through our stuff. He found money in our bag, said it was too much money. Why do we have so much money on us? And he checked my bag and he said, look, this is marijuana. Looked in and it was a tea bag. I said, no, that's a tea bag. So he said, well, I could check it. I said, well, please do what you will. And he smelled it and said, no, it's tea. So he just went through all our stuff and, you know, he didn't find anything because there was nothing to find.
Cherry and Dennis, you're laying this story out piece by piece. I have to ask, when all of this was happening, was there a point where you said, okay, we're being profiled here, when you knew this wasn't how a regular traffic stop goes?
I actually asked him when I was still seated in the car after he told me that I did not have a warrant for my arrest, and he started asking me about drugs for the third time. I said, are you doing this because we're black? And that was when everything took a turn for the worst. He patted the car, he walked back to his car, he put on gloves. And the next thing I knew, he was handcuffing Dennis.
Wow. Cherry, we mentioned that this other cop came along. Dennis said that he pulled out of his car and he recognized you. What do you think would have happened if he hadn't recognized you? You think things would have gotten south from there?
I think it would have gotten worse because he was in the trunk now. He had already gone through my purse. He had gone through my toiletry bag. He had gone through my computer bag, and he was in Dennis's bag, and he just kept asking, well, if you have marijuana, I'll just write you a citation and I'll let you go. And then he said, well, if you have cocaine, just let me know where it is and we can get this on our way. And the other cop said, man, do you know who you're talking to? And I said, sir, have you ever heard of the Just Say No to Drugs campaign? The last time I was in South Carolina, I was about 9 years old, and I was doing a Just Say No to Drugs rally. I'm part of the reason why Just Say No ever went to the White House. And he paused. And then I don't remember what the other cop said, but shortly after that is when he unhandcuffed us and let us go.
Yeah. Cherry, you know, I see how emotional you are about this because this is a very real life situation. But you were also on the sitcom Family Matters in the 90s. And, you know, we actually went back. We found an episode from that show where it actually addresses what we're talking about now. And that's racial profiling. The dad, Officer Winslow, confronts a racist cop who had pulled over his teenage son, Eddie. And I want to watch this scene together and then ask you a couple
questions. Bottom line, your kid was in the wrong part of town. The wrong part of town?
Yeah.
Also, what are you saying? That black kids aren't allowed in white neighborhoods?
Come on. They wouldn't be there unless they were looking for trouble.
And you better talk to your kid. He gave me a lot of lip. Oh.
Yeah.
Is that why you made him get out of his car? Is that why you forced him to lie down? Is that why you cuffed him?
Cherry, you know, this episode aired almost 20 years ago. So what does it say to you that after all this time that we're still talking about this?
That it hasn't gotten any better, and it's real.
Sad.
Family Matters was a show where we always touched on real issues. it hurts me more that telling the story, other people are not surprised. They're not shocked about what we went through. And so many people have gone through it, too. I don't understand how come they haven't fought it and how come they just let it go.
It's like we've been conditioned to think that it's okay, that we have to just sweep it under the rug. But we're not doing that no more. We're fighting.
It's not okay.
No, it is definitely not okay. This is one of those most incorrigible things that unfortunately still goes on today. I do want to read the statement that Showbiz Tonight obtained from the Marion County Sheriff Department. They said discrimination in any form, including racial profiling, is strictly prohibited by this department. And as Sheriff of Marion County, South Carolina, I can assure you I will take immediate and appropriate action to investigate the allegations of racial profiling made by Mr. White and Ms. Johnson. This matter will be dealt with by an internal investigation within the department, and I will also ask the state law enforcement division to review the allegation made against Deputy Barfield. That is the deputy in question here. Dennis, at the end of the day, what kind of a resolution do you hope for or expect in this situation?
Just the knowledge that that it happens and that, you know, we all come together. We can't fight it by ourselves, but if everyone comes together and stops the racial profiling and put a concerted effort to eradicate it. And also, I mean, honestly, personally, I would like for him alleviated from his job. I would like him fired so that other officers know that there is repercussions from doing those type of things. And we want a formal apology from him and the mayor.
I hate for a man to lose his job, but he does not need a badge and a gun. Mm-hmm. Maybe a desk job or something like that.
Well, we really hope people are paying attention and seeing how emotional you are about this, Cherry. I can't even begin to imagine what you went through. Thank you for sharing your story with us, guys, and we'll continue to follow it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Wow. Yep, the cop was white. His name is Deputy Shad Barfield. Oh, did you catch that part, by the way, about Deputy Barfield reaching for his gun? Did you catch that? Now, tell me, Glenn Beck, tell me, Rush Limbaugh, tell me, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, Bill O'Reilly, Ann Coulter, and all the rest of you, where was the black-on-black crime here? Where was it? Oh, right, there wasn't any. Just a guy with a badge that saw black people and went straight for his gun. So when did this happen? September of last year, folks. And yes, the cop, Deputy Barfield, got cleared of any wrongdoing once the initial news attention had died down. Yep, he walked. You wonder why those folks in Ferguson got so upset? That is an example of why. Even a famous, high-powered Hollywood couple, for the crime of taking pictures of cotton while black. Even they're not immune to racial profiling and cops going for their guns. My dad, who I repeatedly talk about here on the show, he has a master's degree. He's a well-educated man, drives a Mercedes, lives in a really posh neighborhood. Oh, and he's earned every bit of it, too. He worked really hard to get where he is so that I might not have to work as hard. He succeeded. Now, I still work hard because I follow his example. I'm definitely a daddy's boy that way. If he can do it, I can do it. Yet even this well-educated, successful dad of mine, even he faced physical threats just for being black. And that, folks, is why I think when he gets old enough, Lawrence Graham's son, you know, the one that had to deal with those two people, those two white guys in the car and calling him nigger and such, I think that son should go to a school outside of New York, preferably in a state in free America, for example, Virginia or Vermont, where he can legally carry. And he should do so. Come to think of it, yeah, Vermont would be a good idea. That young fella clearly needs a gun. For the same reason that my dad needed his. Now, I discovered that this episode ended up pretty long when I first thought about doing it. So we're going to be splitting it up into two parts. What you're hearing now is part one. Next episode will be part two. And we'll pick up from where we're leaving off right now with an incident recently where a man got shot by the police because he was shopping for a BB gun and talking on his cell phone. That's right, shopping for a BB gun and talking on your cell phone. We'll start there next episode. This is Cowboy T signing off until that part two comes up. Until then, safe shooting, practice often, be thankful for what you have, and thanks for listening. See you next time.